Good evening, everybody. Here is shortwave station HAT4, Budapest, Hungary, calling. We shall now give you our news bulletin in English. Our listeners will recall our having reported in our news bulletin of last night that the military occupation of Carpathian Russia by Hungarian forces is now finished, and that the territory has been handed over to the military administration, which will exercise its control there until conditions have returned to the normal and tempers have once again been calmed down. A similar step was taken by the Hungarian authorities last autumn after the restitution to Hungary of certain districts in the Hungarian uplands. During the course of the day, Admiral Nicholas Horthy, regent of Hungary, addressed a proclamation to the peoples of Subcarpathian Russia. By the words of this proclamation, the regent extends on his own and also on behalf of the nation a loving welcome to the Ruthenes. You were and you are our brothers, says the proclamation. During centuries, our ancestors and yours lived side by side in harmony and peace through good times and bad. They fought together for their liberty in times when but few people in Europe knew of their existence. The proclamation continues as follows. The peaks of your mountains overlook the vastnesses of our plains. The rivers that flow through your mountain valleys lead to the Hungarian oilfield. The gifts which nature has conferred upon us both, your mountains and our plains, complement one another, forming an indivisible unity. Providence willed that this should be so, and it is on this account that force was unable to prevail, and it was for but a short time that intrigues, human error, and hatred were able to divide those who had been predestined to live together in one country by the eternal command of nature. The regent's proclamation then points to the fact that the Ruthenes underwent dire sufferings during the past 20 years, but that their kin nation, the Hungarians, have also had much to endure. Now, the Ruthenes must receive that autonomy in the frame of the Hungarian kingdom, which was denied them elsewhere. In addition to ensuring national welfare, it is essential for every son of the Ruthene nation to find his own economic well-being. A sure foundation must be laid for liberty, right, and brotherly collaboration to give way to persecution, subjugation, and unrighteousness. It is necessary for a happy future to dawn on the gens fidelissima of Rakuti's days. The regent's proclamation then reads, a sure basis of economic prosperity is given by the unison with the great plains of Hungary. Hungary is determined to better the general standard of living in Carpathian Russia by inaugurating a plan for important public works. Your land, says the proclamation, is an integral part of Hungary. Your country has never recognized any form of foreign rule during its 20 years of oppression. The Ruthenes are free at last. Their loyalty and perseverance has been recognized by Providence. The regent's proclamation concludes with the following words. Let us jointly thank Providence for having returned our detached brothers to the bosom of the great family in the Carpathian Basin. The two main points in the regent's proclamation, of which we have quoted some words, are contained, first of all, in the promise to grant the right to self-determination to the Ruthenes within the frame of the Hungarian state. It will be recalled that a bill to this effect was passed before legislature in Hungary as long ago as 1918, but that the intervening events and the cession from Hungary of this territory rendered its perpetuation impossible. The other important point is the promise to give material assistance to the autochthonous population of Carpathian Russia by launching a program of important public works. On the occasion of the return to Hungary of Carpathian Russia, there has been an exchange of warmly worded telegrams between Count Teleki, the Hungarian premier, and Signor Mussolini, on the one hand, and between the Italian and Hungarian, the German and Polish foreign ministers, on the other. In Count Telecchi's telegram to Signor Mussolini, we find the following. It is with deep gratitude that I think of Your Excellency, who was one of the first statesmen in Europe to recognize the imperative demands of justice for Hungary, and who, during 10 years, have given countless tangible signs of your friendship for and interest in Hungary. Signor Mussolini has sent the following telegram to Count Telecchi. The Italian nation shares the joys of the Hungarian in this historic moment. I was profoundly gratified, reads the Loire, by the cordial words of Your Excellency, and I reciprocate them in the feelings of true friendship which prompted them. During the course of the morning, the Japanese military attaché in Budapest called upon the Hungarian chief of staff to tender the good wishes and express the joy of the Japanese general staff at the liberation and restoration to Hungary of Carpathian Russia, which, during 1,000 years, formed an integral part of the country. The Japanese military attaché was received with due honors and was requested by the Hungarian chief of staff to express Hungary's most cordial feelings and gratitude to the Japanese general staff. It is but natural that both at home and the foreign press should continue to devote attention to the Carpathian Russian events. It is with deep satisfaction that public opinion in Hungary ascertained that the common Polish-Hungarian frontier has been realized at last, as this enables full development of the friendly ties that exist between the two countries. This sentiment is also stressed in the telegram sent by Count Csáky, the Hungarian, to Colonel Beck, the Polish foreign minister. The press of the countries friendly to Hungary voiced their pleasure at the return of Carpathian Russia to its mother country and at the creation of a common Polish-Hungarian frontier. It must be mentioned that practically in no cases has any misunderstanding arisen or even objection been voiced at the return to Hungary of Carpathian Russia and the creation of a common Polish-Hungarian frontier. You have now heard our new service in English broadcast from shortwave station HAT4, Budapest, Hungary.
The French destroyer Mogador, the flagship of Rear Admiral Lacroix, and 6 other destroyers of Division number 8 and 10 left Brest yesterday morning for Cherbourg and Calais. Those units will escort the cross channel steamer Côte d'Azur, which will take President Lebrun and his suite across to England. Côte d'Azur will be escorted as far as territorial waters. President Lebrun, Madame Lebrun, accompanied by Messrs. Georges Bonnet, French Foreign Minister, André Magre, Lozé, Chief of the Protocol, General Braconnier, and the members of the military household of the President, will leave Paris at 8:05 a.m. by special train, which will arrive at Calais Maritime Station at 11:25 a.m. Troops will form a guard of honor at the dock, where the fine cross channel steamer will be waiting. She will weigh anchor a few minutes after, escorted by the 7 warships and 15 planes of the 34th Air Squadron to mid-channel, where the change of escorts will be made, so that at 12:55 p.m., the British crowd massed at the dock will be able to cheer the naval procession as it enters the harbor. HMS Rodney and the cruisers of the 2nd Squadron at anchor off the coast will fire salute. On landing at Dover, the President and Madame Lebrun will be met by the Duke of Gloucester, the King's brother. Monsieur Georges Bonnet, French Foreign Minister, conferred this morning with Monsieur Coulombre, French Ambassador in Berlin, who has been recalled to report on the situation in Central Europe. The Foreign Minister also received Mr. Campbell, British Attaché d'Affaires, and Monsieur Turi, Soviet Ambassador. This morning, Monsieur Edouard Daladier, Prime Minister, received Monsieur Georges Bonnet, Foreign Minister, with whom he had a somewhat long talk. From London, Sir Neville Henderson, British Ambassador in Berlin, who arrived in London yesterday to report on the situation, went to the Foreign Office this morning while the Cabinet was sitting at number 10 Downing Street. Monsieur Tilea, Minister of Romania, went to the Foreign Office at noon. He was followed 10 minutes later by Count Radzinski, Polish Ambassador. At 12:40 p.m., the German Chargé d'Affaires arrived. Reuters believes that the British government is in communication with the Soviet, Polish, Romanian, Yugoslav, Turkish, and Bulgarian governments about the situation in Central Europe. In the meantime, precautionary measures are being taken in every realm. Mr. Joseph Kennedy, United States Ambassador, called early this afternoon at the home of Sir John Simon, Chancellor of the Exchequer. Reuters diplomatic editor declares, collaboration, closer than it has been for a long time, exists between Great Britain and Soviet Russia owing to the threat weighing on Romania. Reports alleging that Lord Halifax yesterday suggested an alliance to Mr. Maisky are not correct, but it appears certain that the British Foreign Secretary and the Soviet Ambassador examined with complete straightforwardness the realities and possibilities of the general situation. British official commentaries on their talk of yesterday simply assert that the general tendency of events was frankly examined and discussed, that information in possession of both countries was exchanged, and that it was decided to remain in close contact regarding any ulterior development of the situation. There are strong reasons to believe that schemes are being actively discussed between London and Moscow in view to make possible the closest collaboration, not only between Great Britain and Soviet Russia, but also between all the other democracies, in order to prevent any further acts of aggression. The ministers of France are meeting in council at the Elysee Palace and are adopting early measures destined to strengthen France's military security and place France in a state of permanent economic and industrial mobilization. The League for Germanism Abroad held a meeting in Munich on the 17th of March, meeting at which Slovak Secretary of State Karl Martin was to have spoken on the situation of Germanism abroad. He was unable to speak, though, so a report was read by Dr. Berthold, who gave some very surprising figures. He asserted that there were 750,000 Germans in Yugoslavia, 800,000 in Romania, and even up to 3 million in Hungary, if racial relation is taken into account. From Saragossa, Eugenio Montes, the well-known writer, has published an article in the Heraldo de Aragon devoted to France and Marshal Pétain, and which he calls Friendship That Is Returning. He explains first what he believes to be the cause of a certain lack of comprehension of the Spanish drama abroad, reasons of all time, which have justified in Spain old melancholy. Eugenio Montes, among the causes of this incomprehension, considers that the Spanish nationalist movement, absolutely original, has come up against hostility due to a new element, hostility, he says, that France has particularly marked against anything that offers any resemblance, even vague, with that of certain countries, regimes of certain countries, which are rivaling with her in foreign policy. He ends his article as follows: two picked men are going to devote themselves with all their souls to rebuild friendship between Spain and France. In Paris, our ambassador, Don José de Lecuarica, one of our finest brains. In Burgos, Marshal Pita, an old soldier whose heart will feel finer before the glory of our army and the laurels in flower of the Caudillo. In him we salute, with bare swords, France, the better France. For him all the bells of Burgos ring the ancient verse of the lay song, come, children of France, kind gentlemen. And so ends the news bulletin in English, which is given daily from this station, the French government shortwave station Paris Mondial, at 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, on 25.24 meters and 41.21 meters.
The Soviet government distinctly declares that the actions of the German government not only failed to remove the danger to universal peace, but, on the contrary, created and intensified this danger. The stand of the Soviet government is clear. The Soviet government does not recognize the robber seizure of foreign territories. The stand of the USSR follows from its consistent and principled struggle for peace and against aggression. The next few days, notes Pravda, should bring out the stand of those European capitalist powers whose policy has created an atmosphere of impunity for the fascist aggressors. The policy of complacency, of so-called non-intervention, of encouraging the warmongers has opened the floodgates of fascist aggression. The Munich peacemakers abandoned collective security in the hope that they would be able to sidetrack fascist aggression from their own countries and direct it exclusively to the east, against the Soviet Union. But now they reap the fruits of what they themselves planted. They have become clearly convinced that as a result of their policy of concession, they have weakened their own strategic position and their own power. It becomes increasingly clear, as Stalin said in his recent report at the 18th Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, that the big and dangerous political game started by the supporters of the non-intervention policy must end in a serious fiasco for them. The newest act of German aggression makes the existing unstable situation in capitalist Europe more unstable and testifies to the further unleashing of the second imperialist war which the aggressors are conducting against the interests of the so-called democratic state. This is Radio Center Moscow calling. We have just finished reading a news commentary on Czechoslovakian situation. And now, radio friends, we present our daily news bulletin. The reply of the Soviet government to the German note on the occupation of Czechoslovakia has aroused considerable comment in the foreign press. The majority of the British newspapers published the full text of the Soviet note. Even such newspapers as the London Daily Express and Daily Mail, which are generally silent regarding Soviet documents, carry long excerpts from the note. All the leading French newspapers likewise published the text of the Soviet note, which has made a strong impression on French public opinion. The newspaper headlines stressed the strong tone of the Soviet note. The Petit Parisien, which is close to government circles, remarks that the note is supported by exceptionally sound arguments. Polish newspapers publish excerpts from Comrade Litvinov's reply, emphasizing that the USSR considers the occupation of Czechoslovakia by the German troops an act of club law and aggression. The entire Romanian press gives the full text of the note under the heading, "The USSR refuses to recognize the annexation of Czechoslovakia." French public opinion is greatly alarmed as a result of an extraordinary tense international situation. It is generally felt that the present situation is even more acute than that of September 1938. The radical socialist newspaper Evra
States. Little by little, though very distinctly, the present situation is reproducing the situation of 1914. In another article, the newspaper draws attention to the meeting of the city council called for today by Hitler and to the fact that the German press has been ordered to support the anti-French demands of Italian fascism. French public opinion unanimously demands an energetic policy of rebuff to the fascist aggressors. The Soviet Union is more and more frequently and insistently being mentioned as the most important factor in the preservation of peace. In connection with the 10th international situation, a conference of representatives of British youth organizations took place in London yesterday. Among the organizations represented were the League of Nations Union and the youth organizations of the Cooperative, Liberal, Labour, and Communist parties. The resolution adopted by the conference states that the youth of Great Britain will wage a determined struggle against any attempt to introduce universal military service if the British government continues to pursue its present policy. The resolution at the same time emphasizes the fact that the British youth will willingly support any defense measures taken by the government if the government's policy is directed toward cooperation with France, the USSR, and all other peace-loving powers for the purpose of organizing joint resistance to fascist aggression. American newspapers, in commenting on the recent decision of the United States Treasury Department to raise the duty on German imports 25%, points out that this measure constitutes a political expression of the attitude assumed by the American government toward the seizure of Czechoslovakia by fascist Germany. The newspaper Herald Tribune declares that this decision, as well as former decisions taken by the United States government, testifies to the fact that diplomatic relations between the United States and Germany are on the eve of rupture. The newspaper further points out that the United States has refused to recognize Germany's seizure of Czechoslovakia. Authoritative sources, says the newspaper, believe that the statement issued by the American State Department regarding the seizure of Czechoslovakia by Germany was deliberately published before Chamberlain's speech at Birmingham. According to the New York Times, German trade circles are of the opinion that the recent decision of the United States Department of Treasury is equivalent to the placing of a final embargo on the import of German goods into the United States. Mr. Hudson, director of Great Britain's Foreign Trade Department, arrived in Warsaw last night. Before leaving for Warsaw, Mr. Hudson made the following statement to the press. My journey was at first planned as a mission of an exclusively commercial nature, aimed to determine the possibilities of increasing Great Britain's exports. However, declared Mr. Hudson, recent political events have affected the original purpose of my journey. Commenting on this statement, the Polish newspaper Kurier Polski points out that Hudson's visit to Warsaw is assuming a political character and that economic questions will play only a secondary role in the Warsaw negotiations. The subject of Hudson's negotiations in Warsaw will be the present international situation and the program of the forthcoming visit of Beck, the Polish foreign minister, to London. According to the London Daily Telegraph and Morning Post, negotiations of paramount importance are taking place at the present time between Poland and Lithuania. All British newspaper correspondents in the capitals of the states of Eastern Europe report that Hungary and Romania are making military preparations. Intensified military preparations are taking place along the entire Hungarian-Romanian border. Recruits are being called up to the Hungarian army. Every hour, three troop trains leave Budapest, the capital of Hungary, for the border. Part of the reserves are being sent into Carpathian Ruthenia, and the other part to the Romanian border. All roads in the northwestern districts of Romania are crowded with troops destined for the Hungarian and Carpathian Ruthenian borders. Throughout the country, reserves, principally under the age of 24, 25 are calling the station. It is believed that Romania is sending an additional 90 to 100,000 men to the Carpathian-Ruthenian borders. In the opinion of observers, at least 500,000 men have been concentrated on Romania's borders.